Welcome to the St. Paddy's Day special of the Platform Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Cundy Wright, founder and head coach of the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, and our mission is to become our best selves through sport. Happy St. Paddy's Day, everybody. Continuing the tradition for the fourth year, I welcome back my friend, the Irishman David Killen, a.k.a. Indiana Stones. He spent most of his free time over the last couple of years reviving the culture of stone lifting in Ireland and has made some incredible progress. So grab a glass of Guinness and enjoy our conversation and raise a toast with us. Sláinte. Now, before we jump into the episode, I want to announce that registration is open for the WKSF North American Championship 2024. This is our fourth annual competition in the Twin Cities, and it will be held on Saturday, September 28th, hosted by our friends at the Athlete Lab in Little Canada, Minnesota. And just as we did last year, we will include an option for video submissions for participants who aren't able to make the trip in person. Be eligible for all of the same prizes as our in-person competitors. Just go to our website, TwinCitiesKettlebellClub.com, for details. And I'm incredibly grateful that you listen to this podcast. The best way you could support me is to go register for the WKSF North American Championship and tell a friend or two. Go to our website for details. I am also making the Platform Podcast available as a video podcast on YouTube. So please go find my channel at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club and subscribe. Then click the bell to get notified when new videos are released. And of course, if you need help reaching your goals without wasting time, fill out the coaching interest form linked in the show notes. I help athletes of all levels using my integrated coaching approach. And you can follow me on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, or email me at twincitieskettlebellclub@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's step on to the platform with our friend, David Killen.
Awesome.
How you doing, brother?
Ah, sure. Behind the gravat. Come to support you. You all good?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Thank you for making it work.
No problem at all. Loyal upon the corner of the depression. So yeah, man, it's incredible. Great to see you again. I love this yearly meetup because great to catch up. You know what I mean? Is that 3 or 4 years we're doing it now?
Yeah, I think it's year number three now. I was just telling my wife as I was getting ready to come down here. I love doing this podcast every year. And I said, David's gonna keep telling us to come to Ireland until we do.
Over to folk. Don't be messing about. Just do it. Just pick a day. Pick a summer and come over.
I think we're gonna turn it into a trip because her brother lives in Germany, so we're gonna come see the old country, come by Ireland, and then swing over to Germany and see family. Oh, man, yeah. There, so
it's a good stop off on the way, man. Yeah, I mean, it'd be great to see you. Why are you drinking? Why are you on?
I'm on the I got this Redbreast 12-year cask strength. Yeah, my man, we're drinking the same thing. All right, I pulled this specifically for this podcast. I actually had to seek it out and go find it, and I did so, and I've been holding it since. So I literally just broke the seal on it.
Oh man, wait to taste this.
We're gonna pour it and let it breathe for a few minutes. I've got a Guinness that I just poured as my starter. It wouldn't be St. Paddy's Day for, you know, in America without a little drinking before noon. It's 11 a.m. here, but you know it's a few hours ahead of in Dublin. So you're less of an alcoholic sounding person. So
Sláinte, God.
Oh God. That is good. I love Guinness. Guinness
is the best.
We're gonna let this. I'm gonna give it a little taste though before.
Oh, I think it's the best Irish whiskey out there. Well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That hasn't even opened up at all, and that's really good for cask strength. That's really smooth. That's really.
Oh, my Redbreast is just the best, and then the cask strength is just, it's like dialed up to 11 taste wise. A little bit of water through it when you open it up is still
ish. I think this is perfect for me, because the thing that I always don't like as much about Irish whiskey compared to American bourbon and rye is we tend to make it a little hotter and a little bit higher proof. And you know, Irish whiskey tends to be a little bit more mild, a little bit smoother. Yeah. And so when you go to the cask strength, this compares very, very similarly to bourbon on the intensity profile. And
it's got a really kick to it. It's delicious.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
How's life with you, man? How's everything going with you?
Life is good, man. I'm super, super busy. Probably not as busy as you. I started a new job the first week of January. So I'm still I'm still doing AI like I was doing before, but now I work for a new company, for a much larger company. So I went from a 200 person startup to a much larger, you know, 4,000 person HR company here in the States. So it's a lot of fun. I'm working a lot, but not working any more than I was, but it's different kind of work. So I'm, instead of like just delivering projects, now I'm kind of doing strategy and strategic thinking. So it's a lot of fun. It's going to be very, very busy, but it's been great so far. I love the company. It's a really, really good company. It's called Insperity, but it's a like culture first company. The CEO actually wrote a book about like take care of your people is the name of the book. And it's all about how hire good people, really take good care of them, and you can teach them skills and you'll build a successful business around that, so long as you build a really strong culture. So they really give back to the community. They incentivize our employees to do so. And so it's been great so far, man.
That sounds like a nice place to be.
Yeah, it's great, and it's a nice and I'm still remote, so I still work from my basement, even though the company is headquartered in Texas. So you know, it's like 1,700 miles away is our headquarters, but you know, I still get to work from my little cave down in the basement here, which is not too bad. But enough about me, man. People want to hear about you. You're like, you're big time now. I was giving you, I was razzing you on the messenger, like, hey, you don't forget about the little people who had you on their podcast before you were famous. So for people that haven't been keeping up with you, you've been on how many TV shows, how many newspapers, you've what you're doing with reviving stone lifting in Ireland is getting a ton of attention, which is fantastic to see. So give people kind of the rundown of what, you know, 2023 looked like as far as, busyness, I mean, all the things you've been on.
I was thinking back. I was listening back actually to our last podcast last year, and you know, it was just starting to come. It was just starting to get a little bit of notoriety, but it was still pretty much like, you know, small potatoes. But ever since like the summer, say like last July and August, it's just gone stratospheric. I mean, it's gone to a level where it's almost a little bit jarring. I mean, in 8 to 12 months, it's now has its own cultural identity over here now. You know, something you were doing as a hobby now has national airtime. You know, people are responding to it. The culture is back. People are lifting. There's men and women going to these stones. They're lifting these stones. They're sending me videos. The culture is back, and it's garnered so much interest. You know, I mean, I was like on, like, for all the world, like the Irish version of the, you know, the Conan, like, you know, Late Night with Conan or something like that. You know what I mean? It was just like one of the biggest TV show in Ireland. I was only on that 3 weeks ago, you know, as an interviewed guest. I mean, you're sitting there, you're getting interviewed, and then the next person then is like a famous actor or, you know, a famous musician, and then me, you know, and it's like you're getting this, all of this incredible attention, you know, that you'd never expected. I mean, I always hoped, my main goal with the finding of these things, Jordan, was to bring it back, was to bring the culture back. Little did I think there would be so much interest in it, and the amount of attention it's been getting has just been absolutely unbelievable. You know, so you're almost becoming cult icon status now in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know,
Indiana Stones,
yeah,
I'm telling you.
Yeah, man, it's almost weird to be talking about it, you know, because it's taken on so much life, and you know, people are actually recognizing on the street now. You know what I mean? It's really fucking weird. You know, because I'm the exact same guy working the exact same job. I haven't changed in that regard, but this has gotten so famous or so much notoriety that you're getting this kind of level of fame with it, which is just really fucking strange.
You know what I mean? Can imagine.
But it's fantastic. I mean, Ricky Carty, you're on the front page of the Irish Times, which is the biggest newspaper in Ireland, you know. You're on all the biggest podcasts, you know, isn't the biggest
front
podcast.
Page above the fold. I love it.
Front page, you know, front page news. And it's just it's incredible. It's been so rewarding the past 12 months, the amount of attention it's gotten.
Well, I mean, you started on the Platform podcast, so it was nothing but downhill from there.
We started there. I mean, because I was listening back. I mean, I think it's wonderful. It's just this diary, actually, the last 3 years, because the first year we talked, we were just talking about Canada sports.
Yeah.
The second year we talked, I was speaking about going to Scotland, you know, to hopefully lift the Scottish lifting stones. Last year, we spoke of me going to Scotland and finding then the Irish stones. And this year, the Irish stones are found, and now they're back and people are lifting them now. So it's just been a really cool journey, Jack.
I think that's the thing that I found the coolest. And I've been watching you from afar. Oh, and you can't see I've got my Whiskey on the Rocks shirt on. I've got my special edition David Keown Whiskey on the Rocks shirt you can get in the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club store. I put that on especially for you for St. Patty's. This is my St. Patty's Day shirt now. So, but the thing that's been super cool is I've been watching from afar is seeing kind of the proliferation of it, where it's no longer just you finding these stones, right? And exactly. Like now there are other people in Ireland because it's come back and you've helped establish this groundswell of people. Now it's not just you getting in your car and driving all around the island looking for these fucking things. Now there's other people out there finding them as well. And so you don't have to go with your machete and hack through all the overbrush and be like, oh, that's the stone, because somebody's already unearthed it for you. And they're like, oh, this fucker, I can't lift it, but I'm going to call David Keown, and he could bring his crew of lifters. We'll see if we can get this thing out of the dirt, right? Like, that's awesome to me.
It's incredible. I mean, it's almost like the hive mind now, you know. I think the biggest thing for me was the cultural tipping point was I got onto a podcast called the Blind Boy Podcast, and Blind Boy would be a very well-known, he is a cultural icon over here. So, and he's a massive, like, he's like 5 to 7 million people listen to him a week, between America and Ireland and here. So I mean, he's a huge podcast, and like he's had all the top, you know, musicians and artists, and he's like, he's interviewed, you know, the Taoiseach and the president and all this kind of stuff. And then I'm on it. Fucking, what the fuck is that? But once I got on that and we talked for about an hour and a half, and literally we talked on the Sunday, the podcast dropped on the Wednesday, and on the Thursday, I think I got like 10,000 new followers in a day on Instagram. Wow. And hundreds of messages. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages of support and of, yeah, there's one here and I know of one here and all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And people finding them, people telling me where they are, people saying, I'd forgotten about them, but listening to you made me remember. Like, I remember my granddad talking about them. I'd forgotten about it, but you jogged my memory. And then you're going to these places, and like I said, they're found, people know where they are. So you're just going to the place and you're lifting them and you're getting all these incredible stories. And for me, the stories about these things and the history is so much more important than the actual lifting of them. Now, back last year was all about, you know, the lifting. This year, you've almost become a folklore gatherer, you know. Yeah. You're gathering the folklore of the nation.
I mean, I love the fact that it's the intersection of strength sports and strength culture, you know, fitness culture, and the heritage of our people of Ireland, right? Like, and I'm not 100% Irish, but I have a lot of Irish blood in me, and so like I have a lot of pride in that heritage, and it's so cool to see something that was close to lost be found and brought back to the surface. And now, because this all predated the digital age, right, you've had to do so much of this manually, but now that you're bringing it back in a time when the internet is a thing. And like, you know, like it will be part of the electronic record for forever. So we're never going to have to go through this again where these pieces of historic culture are potentially lost, because now there's websites where people are tracking, like, here's where the stones are. Right. So like now it's like, I don't know, it's transitioned to this phase where it's like, okay, we're never going to have to worry about losing this part of the culture as far as the stones, right? The stories, I know you're still collecting the stories too. Like, the stories are also awesome, because that's such a huge part of the mythology and like the giants of Ireland, you know, like the, you know, things, you know, hearing about these stones that were, you know, 400 kilos and a man who was, you know, 18 feet tall, who could throw it across the, you know, like these types of stories. It's amazing. And I just, it's so cool. Like, it's so cool that you have, like, you know, you were the kindling that got this fire kind of restarted, right? Like you were the spark that hit the kindling, and now it's just kind of like spreading all over the place. And it's just so cool to see it, man. It really is.
It's really incredible, because I mean, and all it took, like, it just took the spark, like exactly like you said, it just took the spark, because it was waiting to be refound again. You know, they're all there. It just took someone a bit kind of mad to get up in the morning and, you know, at 4 o'clock and drive up the country and look for these things. But once I started, there was only a very, very thin layer over this, you know, and I just started pulling at the thread of it, and it's back. I mean, and I mean, it's really back now, you know. It's so cool, like, to see guys from the localities, like the parishes, and they're just, They're making excursions to these stones now, and they're going out and they're lifting them, and they're sending you on videos, and they're tagging you in their videos, and everyone's like, "Oh, that's so cool! I can't wait to do that." And like, we had a stone lifting tour there last weekend. Like, I took a few people around the stones in Munster, and we done four of the lifting stones, and just the fucking buzz. I mean, I just said, "Look, I'm going to be out on this day. If anyone wants to join me, they can." And I had about 30 guys ended up coming along. All lifting together. The villages came out to watch us. People were just dropping down like food and fucking flasks of tea. And one fella came out from the local brewery dropping down big slabs of cans and take them with you for
think
a
about,
day.
Think about what that would have been like if you'd put that out there 3 years ago. Think about what the response would have been. Like, "Hey, I'm going to go lift a stone." People have been like, "Good luck. Have fun with that."
you're going to break your back. But now it's like all of these people just wanted to come, you know, and we had such a fucking great day, and it felt like a real renewal. You know, it felt like a real renewal day. Yeah. It was just awesome. But I mean, on top of all that, like, I mean, like you're saying about documenting this stuff now, I mean, like, I'm writing the book, and I was talking to publishers there just last week. Guys working for the Soho Agency in London, and they're all like really excited about trying to publish this book, and documentaries being made. You know, like I said, TV appearances. It's fucking just mad.
Okay,
you know?
So let's go one by one here, because that's awesome. Congratulations. And I think, you know, to me, one of the lessons is one person who's passionate about something can literally change the world, right? Like you have left a mark, which is incredible. Right. But you've got all these cool opportunities that are coming your way because of your passion and your dedication. And like, you didn't get into it for that reason, right? You didn't get into it to get famous, exactly. Or did, like, you just wanted to save this part of the culture, but now you're like, "Oh, here's David Keown, and coming up next is Hugh Jackman." And you're like, "The fuck," you know, or whatever. Like,
it's,
you know,
fucking weird. It's so weird, you know, because I mean, if you almost feel like you're like, you know, that superhero fucking Clark Kent Superman kind of thing, where, like, you know, during the week you're just a normal guy, but on the weekend you can be talking to fucking anybody. You know, you can be talking to anybody. But yeah, it's like I said, it is mentally jarring, and I haven't really talked about it a lot. It is. It's fucking weird. You know what I mean?
No, I don't. I'm still an obscure. Nobody stops me on the street and is like, "Oh, hey, I have rarely had a person be like, "Oh, I've heard your podcast," and even that's weird. Like, and but that's like at kettlebell sport competitions and stuff. Like, you know, like, "Oh, I listened to your podcast." You know, like, "Oh, that's cool." But I haven't had anybody stop me on the street and be like, "Oh, you're the guy with the kettlebell podcast." You know, like, that hasn't happened to me. So I can't imagine what that has. It happened to you with the missus? Like, when you're out, like, you're just like out on a date or something, or out to the grocery store.
It happened last night. We were out for a few drinks, out in Waterford, and, you know, people just coming over to you, you know, just because I went out, like, I wear the hat when I'm doing the lifting, and it's almost kind of like my calling card now, and I had the hat on out in the pub, and people are just coming over, you know, they're like, you're indie, like, I said, "Yeah, that's me, you're doing the thing, that's me, yeah, you know, just love what you're doing, and thanks so much," and people wanting to buy you a drink, and, you know, just wanting to shake your hand and take a photo, and, you know, it's really humbling and strange, because, like I said, I never get into it. That's so not me. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not into self-aggrandization or anything like that. It's just not the kind of person I am. I'm just naturally a humble kind of a person. But it is really nice as well, though, to see the culture come back like that and see the respect it's gotten. Because at the start, like that, people are like, "What the hell is this guy doing?" You know what I mean? "What do you mean you're lifting a stone? It's fucking weird." you know. Now it's like,
well, and Brita couldn't be like, well, it started with my piece of art. Like, this all started because my husband decided he wanted to destroy my artwork in the back, or destroy our backyard.
The garden. My artwork. Exactly, yeah. And I'm looking out the garden now, and it's in shit. Oh, God, it's so bad. It was bad last year we were talking, man. It's just an absolute swamp out there. I know, it's a disgrace. But that was the start of it. But yeah, it's just really, really cool to see it getting the amount of attention it's getting. And my main thing is to get this book. Now, that's my main focus, is to get the book out.
So let's talk about that, because you've gotten a ton of press. We talked a little bit about that. You've been on TV shows. You've got a documentary being made about you, or multiple documentaries. Is it being made about you, or about four different documentaries are being made about stone lifting in Ireland, or is it about you, exactly, or a combination of two?
Pretty much a combination of both. And we made four documentaries with four different teams. Again, after going on the big podcast, four different documentary crews got onto me, and I just said, I'm just saying yes to everybody, because for me it's all about just getting this out there. So I just said yes to all of them. We all went off, and they all had their own kind of different angles and takes they wanted to do. Some wanted to focus on me, some wanted to focus on like mythology, some wanted to focus on history and folklore. And it was lovely seeing everybody else's kind of artistic rendition of what I'm doing, you know. And it was lovely because I'm an artist and I went to art college. I love like that, the different aspects of stories.
Because it's like all along the Watchtower. Everybody wants to cover it because everybody's got a different take on it.
Right? Exactly. You know, it's like everyone has their own angle, and it's lovely exploring those angles, because it does tick a lot of boxes between, like, you know, archaeologists and folklorists and people who are into mythology and people who are purely into strength. Maximum Iron, who are doing a huge one in Scotland, said they're very interested in making one as well. And they're a huge crew, you know. So I mean, there's loads and loads of opportunities coming my way that way. But it was just every single one of them have made these little kind of short form films. So they're like 8 to 10 minutes long, but they're making the short form to then give that to like the likes of a Netflix or Hulu or one of these companies and say, look, we want to make a documentary series about this, or we want to make a long form documentary, maybe an hour long, about this. Give us some money. You know what I mean? Give us a grant, or give us some money for it. So there's four or five of those guys are actually in the process of being made now. There's one of them is only finished. There's another three being still in the editing process. But once they're dropped, they call them sizzle trailers, they'll drop them into some of the big companies and say, look, I think this is a great story. Let's see, can we do it? So I'm hoping one of those will land and someone will say, look, here's 200 grand. Go off and make a documentary about stone lifting.
Yeah.
So that's the hope in the next couple of months. With the documentaries, even as short form documentaries, they're really cool because they're all different stones, different stories going up to the islands. Even those 8 to 10 minute documentaries are a lovely watch. But I think there's so much in this, it needs to get a series, maybe, you know,
I was just gonna say I would love to see like on the Travel Channel or on Netflix or something, right? The David Keown lifting around the world type of tour, right? Where you're just going and discovering old rites of passage and rituals of strength, like from different cultures, and like obviously start with what you know, start with stone lifting and all of that. But it would be really cool if it like branched out into, you know, you're just going to any type of old rite of passage that involved physical feats of strength or whatever, because the Cena games that you were talking about, right? Like the, you know, reviving stuff like that. Like that would be so cool.
So I mean, like, so that's like, I mean, you almost read my mind, because that would be the goal. So like one of the teams said, look, we'd love to do two series. So the first series would be Ireland, and then the second one would be traveling around the world, you know. So because the likes of Sean Urquhart and Ryan Stewart over in America, who are doing such fantastic research, and you should friend those guys up if you haven't, because they're wonderful. They've great research in stone lifting worldwide. But I mean, there's stone lifting in, like, you know, Siberia, all the way through the Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, to Russia, China, Japan, you know, and it's everywhere. All these old
ways. It has to be the oldest form of physical training, right? Like, what is more ancient and timeless than Krog pick up rock, right? Like it has to go back like all the way to like caveman.
All the way back. I mean, it's in ancient Rome, it's in ancient Greece. I mean, there's documented, we've talked about those before. It's absolutely everywhere. And it's still being practiced in a lot of these places. So like I'd love to go, you know, I'd love to say, like, wouldn't it be wonderful if someone just said, look, get out of your Joe job that you're in for 20 years. Here's a heap of money, go off and do something you love. And that'd be just amazing. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm thinking like somebody like Guinness or something, you know, somebody that's really tied into the history of Ireland and part of Irish culture, exactly. Like they could sponsor you, right? Like somebody that's like, because there's a benefit to keeping and preserving that history. And like,
Of course, you know, and it's not just about me. It's about the culture, you know, it's about the culture and the keeping of culture. And like I said, that's very important. I mean, but because of this awesome coverage I'm getting, I mean, I've got a fantastic, I can't wait. I'm heading over to an island off the west coast of Mayo, hopefully in the summertime, an island called Ardilaun, or it's called High Island. But Ardilaun is that in Irish. But it's an old monastic island. So, I mean, it hasn't been inhabited for about 500 years.
Oh, wow.
And there's only probably five people step onto the island every year. And they're usually archaeologists. So I've been invited over by the owner of the island, a man called Fayacon, because there's a lifting stone on the island. It's only a tiny little island. It's only about 2 square kilometers. But there's a lifting stone there that was used by the monks to keep themselves strong. I suppose they had to still, you know, even though they were monks, like they were still living on an island. So they had to like row out into the ocean and catch fish and work and, you know, build fucking things with stone. So they had to keep themselves strong, you know, as well as being pious and stuff. So, and he's like, David, wait till you see this place. He's like, you're never going to see anything like this in the world. He said, there's nowhere like this left. This is untouched. Nobody comes here. I own the island. I don't let anybody on. There's only a couple of archaeologists who have to go through me. But he said, I'll take you out in the boat. There's no wave. There's no ferry. You know, there's no ferry goes out there because no one lives there.
You got a private charter.
Private island, private charter. And he said, you're going to see something pretty magic. And I'm like, I can't wait. You know, so I mean, getting all these unbelievable opportunities.
I'm so excited for you, man. Like that I'm excited just hearing about that. And like, I'm living vicariously through you with my excitement. Like, it's incredible.
That wakes me up even thinking about it. Like, you know, because he's like, there's an energy and a presence here that you're never going to feel anywhere else in the world because nobody goes there, you know? And this was like an ancient enchanted holy island for millennia, really, you know? So, just to see it, to get onto the island, to, you know, walk around barefoot and kind of feel the energy come up off the ground and hopefully lift that stone over there as well. But I mean, to me, that's almost secondary to getting onto that place itself. But you're getting all these really cool opportunities now that would have never happened if I hadn't got the coverage.
Tell me about the book, because you're working on a book too, right? Like that's another big thing that's on your plate as well.
Yeah, I mean, I started, I think about 3 weeks after our last conversation, I started just doodling sketches and writing basic stuff about, you know, just traveling to an area, finding the stone, maybe one short notebook page on each stone, GPS locations, just kind of to keep it as a journal for myself. But from that, it's evolved into the bringing back of the culture and what that means to me and to the Irish people and the whole adventures around looking for the stone and the story and following folklore and getting to the places, meeting the people, hearing their stories, finding the stone, lifting the stone, how that feels. And it's just took on a whole life of its own. And I never thought I'd write, Jordan. I never wrote a book in my life. I mean, my artistic outlet was always music. Playing a music or singing and painting, you know, that's my artistic outlet. I never thought I'd ever write anything, but this is a story that needs to be told. You know, it's a story that people need to hear because some of the stories are incredible. I mean, they're absolutely amazing. You're tying in with Irish mythologies, old folklores, old island men who are, you know, a different generation that will be gone in another 10 or 15 years. And you're hearing all of these old stories about the old ways. And I think it'll be a historic piece because this is something that won't ever happen here again. You know what I mean? We won't ever have these people here again. Those stories will be gone, you know, and the people will be gone. But no, they won't be gone now because they'll be documented in this book. They'll be written about, they'll be spoken about. All their names and stories are now part of it. And they'll be part of the culture forever through it. And to me, this is probably the most important thing I've done. Outside of, you know, family life, this is pretty fucking important stuff, you know. And people have even said to me, you know, famous people, they're like, you know, I can't wait to read a book. I can't wait. I mean, famous Irish actors and fucking musicians and you know, archaeologists and professors, and they're like, I can't wait till this comes out because this is an important part of our culture. And it's amazing that people have felt, you know, I love the fact that people have given it that much respect. Yeah, I really do, you know. And people from all different strata, you know, are fierce interested in it. And they're like, you have to give me a signed copy and, you know, I'll plug it for you then. And, you know, I'll write a blurb for you or something. And you're like, I watch you on TV.
I'll plug it for you too, but it's not going to help a ton. But man, I understand, because like even just hearing you talk about it, I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to get my hands on it, right? Like, you know, I can't wait to see it. Like it's, I don't know, it's there's just something so cool about it, and I just think it deeply resonates with people, because everybody wants their stories to be remembered, right? And everybody wants their stories to be told, and like you're making that happen for people who, I mean, even people who are long since dead, right? Like you're kind of like bringing them back and making sure that their stories carry on, which is like,
exactly,
that's just so incredible. Is that?
It is, it's incredible, you know. I mean, I was talking to an old man up in County Galway, up in Connemara, real West Ireland, rough and stony land, and you know, hardy people, you know, reared from, you know, tough landscape. And these guys and like these old men, and he's like, yeah, this stone was lifted by my great grandfather. It was the last man to lift this stone. And I keep it here and I look after it, and I don't let the weeds grow over it. And, you know, it's beside a wall. And if it ever gets a bit overgrown, I chop back all the weeds, because this is an important part of our local folklore and traditions. And he's naming the men who lifted it, you know what I mean, before. And like I said, now you're writing them down and they'll never be forgotten. And some, like one lad, like he died at 22, he said, but he lifted it when he was 18. He died of appendicitis. We didn't know what that was, he said it. But so you're keeping these people's names and deeds alive through documentation. So it's just wonderful. Like I said, it's gone from just being the simple act of lifting a stone to documenting a culture, a lost culture. So it's been quite the journey over the past 12 months, man.
Were you able to get wind under it? Did you lift it?
Oh yeah, I've lifted every stone bar two. So I've 36 found. I think the last time we were talking, I had about 18. So I mean, it's doubled in a year. 36 found now, and there's only two that I couldn't lift. But I've been training really hard to go back and lift those two.
How big were those two? Which two are they?
The one on Inish Turk is 207 kilos, and
for Americans, that's like 450 pounds. That's like a 450 pound stone. Like that is unbelievable to be able to hug, like to grip that and then pick it up off of the ground, right? Like if you've never pulled 500 pounds or 400 pounds in a deadlift, like I don't think people can understand. Like, you know, my deadlift at my best was like around 600 pounds, but like the ability to be able to pull something that's that awkward and abnormally shaped and like requires such a raw level of strength and grip strength and specific strength too, for like four stone lifting, right? Like that I can't even fathom. Like I can, in my brain, I can imagine how heavy that must feel, but I can't imagine picking that up. Like that's
incredible. I mean, last weekend I went to there's a stone down in Mitchellstown called Clough and Cahir Darrig, which is the stone of the Red Chair, which is just a really cool story behind it as well. But I mean, that's 203, and that came up pretty easily. It came up about a good 6 or 8 inches off the ground, and it came up really well. And that's only like 4 kilos lighter than the one over in Inish Turk. But I see I found the one in Inish Turk probably about maybe a year and a half ago, so I wasn't as strong as I am now. So I mean, it was my mission. Like we were going back actually with a film crew about a month ago to Inish Turk specifically to go back and lift it, because I've trained for it for 6 months specifically. Literally just training to pick up really heavy shit just with that much off the ground.
Yeah.
That was my specific training for 6 months specifically to lift that stone. And we got to the ferry. And actually, it was the day before we were going over in the ferry. And we had a storm, Stormisha, which was just, it was almost like a fucking hurricane. Couldn't get over to the place with the documentary crew cracking up. Couldn't get out in the ferry wasn't running. So I will be back though. I'll be going back, because like I haven't now. These are the only two that I haven't lifted. One is 207. And another one in the Bradley Stone is 220, which is fucking massive.
That is, you know, massive. Yeah, that's almost 500. That's almost 500 pounds, right?
If 500 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh. And it's spiky and awkward, and it's a horrible fucking stone to lift. And he lifted it, and he got the wind under, but he's a really fucking strong guy, and he was at the pin of his collar. I'm like, man, that'll be the tough one.
He's got what, a solid like 20 kilos on you or more? He's a much bigger man than you, right? Like, so that's gotta make a difference. I'm curious, because I'm uninitiated, right? Like I've picked up some awkward shit and, you know, I've picked up, but like the stuff that I used to pick up that was the only thing close to stone lifting were Atlas stones. And those are uniform. Yeah. They're round, right? Like, so they're, you know, that exactly. Strongman stuff, right? But like, what are the factors that come into like, that come into play that, that differentiate stone lifting from anything else? I would imagine obviously like the size of the stone is one thing, right? The shape of it, how evenly distributed it is. What are some of the other factors that come into it that make like, cause a stone that's 200 kilos, one 200 stone kilo stone might be easier to lift than a different one that's 200 kilos, exactly. depending on other factors. What are those factors that might come?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you have the density of the stone itself, you know, you could be lifting granite. I mean, now there's a stone that's like made from gabbro up in Tyrone, which is denser than granite again, you know, and the density of them makes them fucking hard to pick up. Then you have the texture of the stone, the texture of it, if it's smooth.
Something volcanic is probably really hard to grip, I would imagine.
Yeah, the granite ones are actually easy enough to grip because of the texture, because they're grainy. You know,
sandpaperish. Yeah, I can see that.
Exactly. You know, so you got a good grip on them. But then again, a lot of them are rounded because I suppose of glaciation and stuff. So, I mean, they're actually tough, very tough to pick. And then you have, of course, the fact that you're outside. You know,
you're outside. Yeah.
Oh, man, huge factor. You know, so I mean, you're not inside in a nice warm gym with chalk. You're outside in the mud or on a beach or on stone, you know, and you're lifting in all conditions. I mean, you're going up to a place, you're not going to not go because it's raining. You've made it, that's your plan is to go there on that day.
You've invested hours and money and time, you know.
I went up with the documentary crew. Like I said, we organized to shoot this documentary on the weekend. And it was in the middle of Storm Isha, which was fucking horrendous. I mean, like really high winds, lashing rain, you know, that sideways rain. Absolutely. Everything was just saturated. So I was lifting this stone called the Clochandra, which is the giant's throwing stone up in Ahagower and Mayo. And I'm up there at that stone. And it's like, it's the ground is just like a bog. It's just mud. It's just mud and water, sideways rain. This stone is 180 kilos. And like, how the hell am I going to pick this fucking thing up? But I mean, like, I put a hat there because it was a documentary team there. So like, you're not going to not do it. So
does that help get you like fucking jacked up where you're like, all right, well, I got all these people. All these people came all this way.
I mean, like, what are you going to do? You're going to say, sorry, I know you come all the way from England to shoot this. I'm not going to do it now because it's raining. Fuck that. You're going to do it. So you just got to, you know, take a spoon of concrete, harden the fuck up and just go do it, you know? So like, get the towels, towel the fucking thing off. Chalk your hands, keep your hands in your pockets, give it rain, and then just go and lift it. And I got my best lift on that stone ever. I tried to lift it four times and got my best lift in the worst possible conditions on the day. So like I said, the weather really, really doesn't help, you know, for the lifting of the stones. You know, it's another factor in play. But it's because of all of that, it's just so much fun. And it's such a sense of achievement when you do lift one of these things.
It's some feeling
because I mean, it's not just like it's you versus like the bones of the earth versus the bones of man. It's you trying to lift the earth, but also because of the stories and culture, like you do, that is a pretty important factor, and you feel that. I mean, there's a real weight to that when you're lifting these stones as well, especially some of the ones in graveyards. You know, you're pretty much aware, like, yeah, I'm in a graveyard here, and there's people used to lift these at funeral games, you know, and there's a real sense, sense of kind of moments to these things as well.
Does it have like a spiritual nature to it when you're doing something like that?
I mean, definitely for me, it does a very spiritual thing to it. I mean, I get very emotional, and I'm not an emotional person. It never was, you know, I was always pretty stoic, but there's something about this that just, it gets you deep inside, because it's like you're aware of the culture and what these people went through, you know, and all of the problems they had and all the things they have to suffer through, oppression and you know, and that's all part of it. That's all part of what you're doing. And you're resurrecting this ancient culture. So there's a huge weight to these things. They obviously physically and spiritually, you know what I mean? You're very, very aware of it. I know I am when I do it anyway. It's not just man pick up rock, it's you're picking up a culture, and it's really fucking really, really cool, you know?
Yeah, that sounds every time we talk about it, it gives me goosebumps, and it makes me want to come do it. So that leads me to this question, specific question. If I want to get ready to come to Ireland and lift some stones with you, you mentioned specific training, right? Like, yeah. How do you specifically train for the art of stone lifting, right? Like, because this is a skill. How would you adapt a training program to do stone lifting specifically?
Well, I mean, especially on this podcast, because really primarily the kettlebell people listen to something. I went from kettlebell sports to this, so it took a big shift in training. But what I've been doing is literally just I have a stone at the back which is flat, and I've been training to lift that from the ground quite comfortably. So like it's 90 kilos. That's just a warm up weight to me now. But I mean, 90 kilos just to break the ground with it. Get it about maybe 6 or 8 inches off the ground, but just be very, very aware of using your legs and your hips as opposed to just using your back. So getting yourself into a position which is comfortable, which is safe, and thinking about it like in a deadlift terms, but it's like it's a very, very deficit deadlift because you're down so much further, you know, grass level.
Full depth deadlift.
It's almost like a deficit sumo deadlift, you know? So it's to think of it in terms of that and to use your legs and hips. So I've then been literally using my kettlebells as added weights. So what I do is I get to like a standard linear deadlift program, something pretty basic. Work out your max, what your max is by adding kettlebells. Like I said, I have 28s, 20s, I have 24s, I have 36s, 48s, 42s. So just until you hit your max, what you can do. And then like to build your program from that. So building my program on just to be able to, for this specific Irish stones, because a lot of them are just to break the ground or to get the wind under them. So I was literally training just to do that. So I'm just training to pick these stones, heavy, heavy weights off the ground. So gone from lifting at 90 kilo and not feeling heavy to now out the back lifting 190 kilo and it feeling pretty doable, you know, and bringing that up, then trying to get that to up around the 200, 210 and just using that linear deadlift program. One day a week I train stones because it just takes so much out of you. Like you're doing like max effort work, or just under sub max. So once a week for me is enough. I'm 45 this year, so I do take a little bit more time to recover. But one a week with stone lifting, heavy, then I'll do a kettlebell sport day, like a kind of good cardio day on a Wednesday, and I'll have a lighter stone program, or I'll go out to the beach and lift natural stones on a weekend. So 3 days a week, but one specifically tailored for the type of lift that Irish stone lifting is, which is just to break the ground with it. So, okay. Like I said, just getting your max and building back from that.
And you also still keep up your mobility routine every day, right? I know that you still stretch every morning and still.
Every morning. Yeah, you have to. I mean, like, because you're getting yourself into some really fucking awkward positions with some really heavy weights.
Yeah.
So, I mean, your hips have to be healthy, you know. You have to, your joints have to work correctly. Yeah. Your joints have to be able to get you
to that end range of motion, and then your muscles have to be strong enough to express their strength in that end range of motion, right?
Exactly, to get you out of that. Because, I mean, you're in the depths of a deep squat. Sometimes you're sitting with your ass on the ground with a fucking, I mean, I was over in Inishmore with a 171 kilo block of granite on my fucking chest with my ass sitting on the grass. And then you have to be strong enough to fucking stand up out of that. You know what I mean? From that huge decked in the squat to be able to be strong enough to get up out of it. So mobility.
What kind of footwear do you wear? Are you wearing just like hiking boots, or you weren't like, do you have special shoes that you put on when you're
I go out in hiking boots, and a lot of times I'm just lifting in shorts. I don't wear a belt. You're not a fancy dude.
You're just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna nut up and lift this fucking thing.
my only piece of gear that I have to bring with me is my fucking hat. That's it. I mean, but what is important as well is, and you do need them sometimes, is a towel and chalk. So a towel and chalk are, because of the rain, sometimes you do need to bring it. Most of the times I won't need them, but just in case. But other than that, it's just rock up what you got. Because, I mean, I'm thinking all these old guys used to do this 100, 150 years ago. They know nothing about nutrition. They know nothing about periodized strength training. They know nothing about fucking gear or what to wear or what not to wear. They just rocked up and done it. Like, if they can do it, I can fucking do it.
Love it. I love it. In your times on all these different shows and stuff, has there been anybody that made you like starstruck? Like, holy fucking shit, I'm meeting so-and-so. Like, has anybody like really made you starstruck?
Well, the way we're like, I mean, Tommy Tiernan, the comedian.
Irish Conan, right? He's the Irish Conan O'Brien.
Yeah. So like, I mean, I've been watching him in stuff since the 90s. I mean, he was in Father Ted, that he was in, like, you know, the Derry Girls, which I'm a big fan of as well, you know. But I mean, I've been watching his stand-up for years. And, you know, you're like, this guy's a, you know, he's a national treasure. He's a cult icon.
Yeah.
And then you get invited onto a show, and like I'm sitting there talking to him, like I'm talking to you, and like you sit at the back of your head, you're talking to me, like back of your head thinking, that's fucking amazing. That's just so weird. How did I end up here? You know? How the fuck did this happen?
I got talking heads in my this is not my life.
It's so exactly. You know, letting the days go by. But I mean, it was just so fucking weird. Cause I even said to him, I'm like, man, I was in a normal job yesterday, just, you know, and I'll be back in my normal job tomorrow. But here I am talking to you. It's really fucking weird. And Blind Buy as well, because I mean, I've been following Blind Buy for years. His podcast is the biggest podcast in pretty much in Ireland or Europe almost. It's massive. And getting on his podcast was, again, like, you know, it's nervy as hell, because you know, like, there's going to be at least 5 million people listening to this. So you're like,
get you on Joe Rogan, man. Like, we got to get you, the, you know, like on even
someone jokingly said that to me. Someone jokingly said that to me about 3 months ago. I'm like, the way things are going, I don't think it's not a possibility.
It's no, I'm not joking. Like, I'm serious. Like, I could legitimate. This is the type of story that Joe Rogan would think would be really fucking cool, right? And like,
I mean,
probably have to smoke a bunch of weed.
I think I could just manage that. Yeah, I could.
Great. Like, you go lift a really heavy stone the day before, and then you go do your recovery day where you smoke a little weed, talk with Joe Rogan.
I can see it. I you know what I mean? It's getting to the stage where it's like it was the realms that are ridiculous, but then it was like, I can actually fucking see something like that happening, because where does it stop? I mean, I've hit the top.
Do you have an agent, by the way? Do you have
I mean, people are saying like you need to get yourself a fucking manager or something, because I mean, like this, they're bringing out a beer in my name in 2 weeks' time. I got a company making a fucking.
How did
beer.
We not lead with that?
I know. I mean, when you think about it now, there's just so much going on. But I mean, this company called the White Hag Brewery up in Sligo. Like, we're always like, we're big into our mythology and we love what you're doing. So, how about we make a couple of beers around the Lifting Stones? And you know,
Indiana, the Indiana Stone Stout, or what? Like, what is it?
What they're going to call it is they're going to call it like, we need to have something said with a really cool name. So they can be naming after one of the stones. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. So we said we name it after maybe the Milan, because that's the one out in Inishmore. I found first MULLAN. It's easy to pronounce. Like, that's fucking great, because we export half hours over to, you know, the Netherlands and to France. So I mean, it has to be something that people can pronounce, you know, in a different language. But I said that sounds great, because it's only, you know, MULLAN, easy to pronounce. And they're like, we have a piece on you, like, you know, and they've done a mock-up of the label and, you know, piece on me about the side, a QR code you can scan, gets it through to my Instagram and stuff. And I'm like, I have my own beer. That's like, for Irish people, that's almost like getting a knighthood. You know?
Yeah, I'd rather have your own beer than a fucking knighthood, right?
Like, that knighthood. I'm getting a beer named after me. So yeah, it's just really fucking strange.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's getting to the stage where it's like, yeah, I think I do need to get someone who'll help me with all this, because like we're talking about reviving the Charlton Games, bringing back the ancient Irish warrior games. There's talk about that this year, and
I was in until you said like a five kilometer run, and then a 5 kilometer mountain run, and I was like, yep, nope, I'm out. I'll do all the other stuff. You want me to hit it? You want me to toss a rock and hit it? Like, I'll do that. You want me to lift a stone? I'll do that. You want like any of the but you start talking about running.
I don't want to do the running myself. I used to do, but I haven't done it so long now. I'm just lifting fucking stones. It'd be hard to get back there for 5K, but I'll do it for this. But I mean, I just think it's, and I put it out there. I woke up with this idea the other day. I just woke up. It's like something planted in my head when I was asleep. And I woke up at 6 a.m. and said, I think this is a great idea. Let's do the FINA trial games.
Yeah, the FINA games. I saw that. And I immediately got stoked on it. I love the idea, man.
That'd be class. So then I put that out online, and then I had people. Within 3 hours, I had people wanting to offer me sponsorship money, wanting to offer, you know, one fellow said, like, I'll give you £1,000 for a prize money. Another guy, I'll play music at the event for you for free. Another guy, I'll advertise it for you for free. I'll make up all the posters and stuff for free. And like, this went from just being an idea to within about half a day thinking, this actually really fucking happen.
As much as I joke about like I don't want to run, like I'm in. I will fucking come. I will come for the FINA games, because that's not, it's so cool, and it's such a huge, like, to revive something like that, like that would be so amazing.
It's so fucking class. And like, there was a guy then rang me who's they're a management company, and they were like, we manage one of the top acts in Ireland. I won't name them now, but they're the management team for them, and they're like, we think that's a fucking fantastic idea. We run a festival based around Brian Boru. So Brian Boru will be the ancient Irish High King. And we do a festival every year. And we think we could, would you want to run it maybe at our festival and try it out and see what you think? And run the event at the festival. Because we have everything. We have the place. We have the land. We have the insurance. I'm like, that sounds like a fucking great idea. So I'm talking to them on Tuesday. And so I think this is actually going to happen now. That, and then I said, like, if it takes off, and it, from the sound of it, like there's guys come wanting to
bring teams from Cornwall.
There's guys wanting to bring teams from Scotland, all over Ireland. If it takes off, which I believe it will, like then you could market it and take it to America, or you could take it to fucking wherever. Let's do the Fena games here. Let's do the Fena games there. You know, and
there's probably as many Irish Americans as there are Irish people.
I would say more so. Exactly, and
I really
believe that this would be a way of getting in contact with your roots. You know, so I mean,
yeah,
it's like, you know, calling it after the Fena, because they'd be like, the Fena trials were based around agility, dexterity, athletic ability and strength. So I mean, I think the three things I was talking about is cool, with the running and, you know, the long puck with the hurling ball and the stone lifting, and also the fact that, I mean, there's not a hell of a lot of fucking gear involved with that, or equipment.
Anybody can do it.
Anyone can do it. Just run, you know, and we used to play the hurls, just hit the fucking ball a couple of beds up a hill, and then a couple of stones you can lift up into a barrel. You know, it ain't that fucking hard to set up. But I think it's not about the actual physicality of it. It's about the getting in contact with the past and the culture, which we're coming back to again and again. That there's a hunger for that here now, because I can feel a real upswelling here. Like there's a real hunger for culture here now in the past 5 years.
What do you think?
Massively so. Well, I think because, and I'll be talking about this to a couple of people, like, we are only a republic. Like, we're only our own independent nation for 100 years. That ain't a long fucking time, you know? We're only the Republic of Ireland. 100 years, and in that 100 years, like, we've had a civil war, we had to fight for our independence, we had 2 world wars, mass immigration, huge smothering blanket of Catholicism, and we're climbing out from underneath these two blankets of imperialism and Catholicism over the past 5 to 10 years, and we're kind of blinking in the light of freedom, saying, like, who are we? What does it mean to be an Irish person now? We defined ourselves through the struggle against the British for so long, for probably 800 years.
Yeah,
like that was our definite. I mean, when I was growing up, I remember the Troubles of North, and I remember, like, the RUC and, you know, the IRA and the kneecappings and the punishment beatings and the shootings and the killings and the bombings. I remember all that. It was a part of my life. So I mean, the rebel songs and all our songs and our culture was pretty much us fighting against Britain. That's not there anymore. That's gone. I mean, people under the age of 30 will have never had that in their life for the first time in probably 800 years. There isn't an active fight going on against England and us. So it's like, now what does it mean to be an Irish person? Who am I? And the best way to find out who am I is, who were we? And I think a lot more people now are starting to look back the way and say, yeah, that's who we were before all this happened. Our mythologies are important. Our fucking old games and our old ways are important. And that's why I think this has took off just at this time, because maybe 10 years ago, if I was doing this, no one would have given a shit. But I think because of that upswell of love for the culture and love for the lore, and the language is coming back. The language is almost dead, but it's coming back. I'm learning the language, like, you know, Tom McFoley as well. And there's just a love for the old Irish ways. And to be helping lead the charge in that is just a real honor, you know?
Yeah. Do you think there's because I personally think there's a deeper thread to it. I think it's a human thing. Like, there's definitely a very specific Irish part of it, like you said, because of the culture of Ireland. But I also think, coming out of the pandemic, I think there's a deeper, because of all of the isolation we felt for those two and a half years, I think there's now a deeper appetite across all cultures for connection to other humans, but also connection to our past. And, like, where did we come from?
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I think there's a deep human need to want to understand, where did I come from? Why am I here? Does any of this matter? Right? Yeah. How do I leave an echo? Right? All of those deeply human instincts.
Good point. I mean, I think, yeah, COVID probably had a lot to do with it. I mean, I know I'm obviously a bit blinkered because of this whole folklore buzz I'm on over here at the moment. I'm blinkered, but just the whole Irish aspect of it. But I think you're right, because I think it's starting to become more and more apparent. Like, you know, that, you know, we're connected, you know, through media, but, like, that's not real connection. I think people are hungry for real connection. You know, they're hungry for physical connection, you know, and connection to your ancient past. And that's just fantastic. I love that, because it had gone too much the other way, you know, and there's a lot of depression. And, like I said, especially COVID was so difficult on everybody, that, like, we're not meant to be isolated. We're not that kind of animal, you know, we're a social animal.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, big time, you know, and I think the fact that that connection is coming back is a wonderful, wonderful thing, you know, and I hope this kind of, because it's mad, like, you know, people are saying, like, I'm looking for stuff now in my own country. I'm getting people, you know, the likes of in France and in Northern France and in Brittany and people in Belgium. And, you know, they're like, I'm looking for the culture here now because of what you're doing. And that's really cool to hear that. You know what I mean? That people are actually looking in their own land for connection and for getting back to these old ways, which is class.
Yeah. And it's for me as a father, I think it's one thing I've been trying to explain to my kids, like, where they come from, because my daughter asked me the other day, like, you know, well, what am I, you know, cause we were talking about, you know, different heritages and things like that. And she's like, well, what am I? And I was like, well, I was like, your father is a bit of a Euro mutt because I'm Irish, which means there's also some Welsh and English kind of injected there against our will. And there's also, you know, there's, you know, and then there's, and then I have my Germanic roots. Right. And then your mother is Norwegian and Swedish and German. And so she's like this amalgamation of things. Right. But like there's, and I think that's becoming more and more prevalent, but we also kind of want to understand, like, what are all of the, what does it mean to be Irish? What does it mean to be Norwegian? What does it mean to be like, right. Like, or what did that mean? Even if we're now like an amalgamation of all these different things, but like, you want to understand what those cultures meant, because all of those pieces contribute a part of who we are. And I don't know, there's, it's just such a cool thing to see. Like, we want to capture that history and know how does that all come together for us so that we can better understand ourselves and better relate to other people. And, you know, like, exactly, to find that commonality.
Exactly. And I mean, what I love about this is, like, you're not reading about it and you're not talking about it. You're out and you're actually picking up history. You know, you're getting in contact physically with history, which is wonderful as well, because that doesn't happen that often, you know. You're picking up something that was picked up for possibly, some of these stones I found are pre-Christian. So before the year 700, these stones were being used as either conduits to ancient deities or as lifting stones for that long. You know, I mean, I found one up in Derry that was a chieftain's coronation stone that, you know, the ancient high chieftains of the area used to go up and have to lay hands on that stone to announce their right to rule, you know, up in the Deuce Ascend to hilltops. And it was like, you're going way back, way, way back with this kind of stuff. And that stone has been used for that purpose for thousands of years. It was also a lifting stone. Whether it was a lifting stone in correlation with that, I'm not sure. But it was said that it was a mighty feat of strength for a man to break the ground with this stone. And it is a mighty feat of strength, because I saw it. It's fucking massive. And I lifted it. But it was just going to this area. And the name of the area was in connection with Fionnacool. It's called the Seat of Finn. So the Sefin Hill, the Seat of Finn. So Fionnacool's seat. So, I mean, Fionn was meant to have thrown that stone from a mountaintop. The ancient high chieftains, because it's Fionn Tushar, it's a magical stone. So they used it, like, they coronated at the stone. And it was a great feat of strength to pick it up. And to get in contact with these things, like, you're getting in contact with mythology, folklore, culture, history. And it's just the most fucking incredible feeling. You know what I mean? You're like, Fionn MacCool through that. You know, one of the great, you know what I mean? One of the greatest men in Irish mythology. You're like, he touched that, and now I am. And there's a power to those things. Because I remember trying to pick it up. I remember seeing it and looking at it going, I can't pick that up. It's too big. The first time I saw it, I was like, no way. No man alive can pick this up. It's about the height of me, and it's about 2 foot by about foot and a half. It's just a pillar. Yeah. I'm like, I tried 3 times, documentary crew with me again, didn't happen. Went off, gathered myself, felt something come through me. I was thinking about mythology and all that kind of stuff. And I felt the power come through me, went, picked that stone up about 3 inches off the ground. Felt myself come back, let the stone down. Couldn't believe I lifted it. Speaking to people, the documentary team couldn't believe I lifted the size of it. They were like, that's almost superhuman effort, you know? But I will say what happened was, for 3 days afterwards, my central nervous system shut down.
I was just going to ask, what's the cost of lifting
that heavy? The cost of that was, I literally slept for about 18 hours out of 24 for 3 days in a row.
Wow.
Really fucking sick. It's like, I wasn't physically meant to do it, but something came through me to help me do it. And it did. It happened. It came up. And it'll be forever documented, you know, that you did it. But I mean, it's like, your body wasn't meant, no one is meant to lift that kind of weight. I mean, it's, I put it up around 300 kilos easy.
Ugh,
you know?
Wow, dude.
But it was just, it was so fucking cool. And like I said, I think there was a bit of mythology or a bit of something kind of helped me along the way there, you know. But I'm having all these adventures, and like I call them magical adventures. Like I'm saying, like magic's following me around lately. Just all these cool stories and happenstances and chance meetings and lucky encounters that just don't happen. They shouldn't happen. You can't just be walking down a village and meet the one person the whole village you manage to know or something is, you know.
Yeah.
You go to a place, you find it, you meet that one man who knows about it. You know, you're hearing stories through the grapevine, or you're literally fucking, I fell over one of them in a field. You know what I mean? Literally, fell over, buried, and I literally fell over the one corner of a stone that was poking up out of the ground in the field.
It makes you feel like there's a fabric to it, right?
There's something guiding me along the way, you know? There's something using me as the best to find.
I have to note for people that are only going to listen to the podcast that I said Sláinte, and you had an empty glass, and because you're Irish, you were like, oh, I have to refill my glass. Because you can't toast on an empty glass, and you can't.
Oh, man, no. Can't, oh, no. I have to drink some more of this lovely red breast.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I have to drink another. I have to drink another little bit of red breast.
Just keep saying Sláinte. Say it before you go as well, will you?
Yeah. Yeah. I promised my wife I wouldn't get too schnockered before noon, and that we would wrap on time. So I got two more questions for you. The first is, there's such a huge variance in what your demands on your body have been between kettlebell sport to now lifting stones that are 200 plus kilos. How has your body had to adapt? How have you had to change your body to these new demands of stone lifting?
I've put on, I'd say 20 kilos, almost 50 pounds weight since my kettlebell sport days.
Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah, you were lean and mean when you were kettlebell sport.
Oh man, I was just
now you're fucking jacked.
Now I'm just big, but I mean, yeah, I'm just eating more, eating a lot more. Because I remember even talking to Sean when he was over, like we went on a stone tour last year, and he was like, "You just got to eat, man." Just, you know, I mean, so I was like, "How do I get stronger? Eat more, lift heavier, eat hard." So I mean, I put on a lot of weight, which is weird because I spend so much of my time losing all this excess weight.
Trying to get lean, yeah.
No, I'm literally just trying to get big. But it's a hell of a lot more fun doing that. But no, like I'm eating, so like I'd have a big breakfast, I'd have like snacks, and I'd have a dinner at lunchtime, and then I'd have a dinner in the evening time. So just eating a little bit more, but I'm training smart. You know what? Like I'm not training 4 or 5 days a week like I used to do in kettlebell sports. I'm training 3 days a week, sometimes even 2 days a week.
Yeah. Well, very, very different demands, right? Because with kettlebell sport, it's all about conditioning, and the aerobic and energy anaerobic energy systems require 5 to 6 exposures a week. You're bouncing your biceps, yeah, and it distracted me. like that requires 5 to 6 conditioning sessions a week to get the stimulus needed to improve conditioning. Strength, especially maximal output strength, is a very different thing because, like as you talked about, the cost of that on your CNS is that it needs time to shut down and regenerate, which, like, right, if you're doing full-on maximal, like, and you're talking maximal to a level that most people have never even fucking tried, if you're, yeah, doing like maximal effort on output, your CNS needs a solid 2, 3, 4 days to regenerate before it could even, yeah, think about doing that again. So the training frequency is so much lower because the intensity is so much higher. It is like the complete opposite ends of the spectrum as far as what you're
it's
training
so for. Weird. Yeah, it's been such a weird change. But it's just been so interesting to see how the body reacts to stimulus. It's just been such a fucking cool journey physically as well. You know, to say, like, you know, you can go from being a pretty high level endurance athlete to, you know, lifting one fucking massive thing once, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's been a really weird journey, but it's been great to see that you can get stronger in your 40s, in your mid-40s. I'm stronger than I ever was in my whole life, and I'm getting stronger. I mean, because I can lift stones this year that I couldn't lift last year. I mean, I went over to the Liam O'Flaherty stone last year, and I couldn't break it off the ground. And this year, I could pick it up to my lap and stand up with it. And you're like, you can get stronger in your fucking mid-40s. It's just so cool. And it kind of goes against the grain what a lot of people talk about. People are like, oh, no, everything's on the slide. Of course, there's a slide. You know what I mean? But you can arrest that slide. And if you've never, like, trained heavy before, you can get fucking pretty strong, man. As long as you look after yourself, you train correctly, you look after your mobility, I put myself forward as like, you can get fucking stronger and a lot stronger in your 40s, you know? It's really cool because the amount of people online is like, oh, I'm in my 30s and I'm there with my, you know, pain in my back and a pain in my knees and all these memes. I'm like,
fix your shit.
Fix yourself. Exactly. Have you ever trained? Yeah. You know what I mean? Have you ever worked on your mobility? If you haven't, shut the fuck up and go do it, you know?
That's the thing. Is people don't want to do the thing that, like, I'm guilty of this myself. Like, don't put me up on my high horse here. But, like, you know, like, people complain about things. Like, oh, well, this is all falling apart. It's like, yeah, have you ever worked on your mobility intentionally? Like, have you ever had the discipline to stretch every day for 30 minutes? Because you'd be amazed how much better you would feel if you stretch for 30 minutes every day. Or it's like, oh, you don't like that you're getting weaker? Maybe strength train 3 times a week, right? Like, oh, you don't like that you get out of breath, you know, chasing your kids around, maybe try going for a walk every day or try going for a jog every day and see how much better you feel, right?
Exactly. I mean, there's always a way around it. You know, there's always a way to fix yourself. And it's like movement is medicine if you do it correctly. And it's like, just go out and fucking do it and stop giving out about, oh, I'm paying him this and I'm paying that. Just fucking figure it out, man, and just go fix yourself, you know? And you can improve.
Take a spoon of concrete and harden up. I love that. I'm totally stealing that turn of phrase. I fucking love it so much. That eat a spoon of concrete and harden the fuck up. I love that. I love that so much.
New t-shirt.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last question, because I promised we would end on time, which is always a bad promise that I can't ever keep. So this is going to be a softball. So you won't need any time to think about it. What's been, from this past year, your favorite moment of this past year of stone lifting and exploring and meeting people? Like, pick one. I'm putting you on the spot. You got to pick one. And I didn't preempt you with this question, so I'm gonna give you a little time to think about it.
I think the best thing that I've done, and it's the start and the end of my book, was the finding of the very first stone, the Lemo Flaherty stone, which we've spoken about in our last.
Yeah.
But this year, gone. I got invited back by the Lemo Flaherty Society.
Oh, sweet.
So I got invited back by the Lemo Flaherty Society to lift that stone in front of the society members and the islanders. So that was a really emotional moment. So I went back to the island with my wife came and my dad came with me. And it was the most beautiful day. And we went back to the island, met all the society members, including some of Lemo Flaherty's great grandkids. We went down to the stone. There must have been about 60 people came. All of the islanders came. And I had 2 documentary crews come with me. And national TV came with me. And there was a young lad from the island read the story of the stone, about the stone itself. And I picked that stone up to my knees my very first time being able to lift that stone at all. And it was this whole full circle moment from the very first finding of the very first Irish stone and knowing that the culture was there, to then coming back. And that was just me by myself and no one gave a shit. But to come back invited by the Lemo Flaherty Society, who were on the island, to meet Lemo Flaherty's relations and to have national TV and documentary crews with me and my wife with me and my dad with me, and to lift that stone and hear that roar from the islanders when I picked it up. I don't think I can ever top that. It was just this amazing cultural moment and a whole full circle moment for me. It was amazing. I don't think I'll ever top it. It was incredible.
Love it. That's amazing, dude. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you carving out the time for me. I love these chats. I always feel bad because we could talk for 2, 3, 7 hours, right? And I always feel like we're cutting short, but I just want to tell you how much I appreciate it. And as a child of Ireland, you know, living in America, I can't tell you how much it means to me that you're trying to revive the culture and keep it alive. And it is something that I do plan on bringing my kids over there and being able to piggyback on the work that you've done to show them kind of where they come from, and you know, to be a part of it myself and to come over and lift some stones with you and do all that. I know I keep threatening you with that, but I promise you I'm gonna follow through on that, and we're gonna do some tactical planning to make that happen, because I want to come over and lift some stones with you, and we'll talk.
It'd be great to finally meet up. We've been talking for so long, we're talking for years, but it'd be great to finally shake your hand and buy a pint.
Yeah.
And we go lift some of those stones together. I'll definitely carve out a bit of time. Give me a couple of weeks' notice. we'll organize something. I'm really looking forward to it, man. And thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, George.
Yeah, sláinte, man. We'll talk soon.
Sláinte, Roger.